Wake up, America. It's time to stump the experts. Each week at this time, the H.J. Heinz Company, makers of the famous 57 varieties, gives you information, please. A quartet of experts is on hand to answer your questions. Send them to Information, Please, at 570 Lexington Avenue, New York City. We may edit them a bit, and in case of similarity, you'll have to accept our judgment of who shall be paid. If we use your question, the H.J. Heinz Company will send $10 in war stamps, plus a set of the 12-volume Britannica Junior Encyclopedia. If we muff the question, you get $57 in war bonds and stamps, plus a 24-volume set of the regular Encyclopedia Britannica. All questions remain our property. Information, Please, is presented under the supervision of Dan Golenpaul. And now, our master of ceremonies, book reviewer of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, traveling right along in its own spontaneous and unrehearsed manner, Information, Please, tonight presents its two end men, John Kieran of the New York Sun and Franklin P. Adams, together with two guests, our old friend, the eminent composer and commentator, Dean Taylor, and the famous novelist, whose most recent book is The Valley of Decision, Mrs. Marcia Davenport. Now, we're going to begin with a question from Burkham Ferris of St. Albans, Long Island. I'm going to give you several sets of words. In each of these related sets, which one of the group doesn't belong and why? You have to get two out of three. Here's the first set. Speedwell, Roadrunner, Johnny Jump-Up. One of them doesn't belong. Mr. Kieran.
The Roadrunner does not belong.
Why?
Because the Speedwell and the Johnny Jump-Up are flowers, and the Roadrunner is a very odd bird found plentiful in Arizona.
In Arizona? Only in Arizona?
Well, that's where I've seen it.
And why do they call it Roadrunner? Because
it runs along the roads and over the desert. It's a very funny-looking bird.
Very clear. Very good. That's quite right. Now, how about this set? Lotta Lehmann, Lily Lehmann, Lisa Lehmann. Mrs. Davenport.
Lotta Lehmann and Lily Lehmann were singers, but Lisa Lehmann was a composer, and
yeah.
That puts her out.
That puts her out. I don't know why they discriminate against an ex-governor, but those are the only three Lehmanns we have. Quite right. Mosquito, Spitfire, Halifax. What one doesn't belong in that set? Mr. Adams.
Halifax.
Why?
Because that is not a an airplane, fighting airplane.
Halifax, isn't it?
Yeah, yes, it is.
Mr. Davenport?
Just the other way around. The Mosquito. The Halifax is a bomber, and the Mosquito and the Spitfire are fighters.
That's wrong, too, Mr. Taylor.
The Mosquito is a new type of bomber, and the Halifax is also a bomber. The Spitfire is the sharp-nosed British fighting plane.
Yes, that's the one that doesn't belong.
It was all a tip of my tongue.
Well, it took quite a time for Mr. Kieran to set us right. That's one wrong, but that passes us with two out of three and sends us on to this one from Elizabeth Turnell of Urbana, Illinois. Name a character of mythology. Well, I'm going to name three. The first one went through fire for his girl. The second went through water for his. And the third went through the earth for his. Fantastic, all three of them. How about the first? Who went through fire for his girl, Mr. Taylor?
Siegfried.
And for whom?
Brunhilde.
Yes, and was it worth it, Mr. Taylor? Oh, any response?
On the whole, yes.
On the whole, yes. Very good. And who went through water for his girl? Went through water. An idea, gentlemen? Does it don't, Mr. Taylor?
I have an idea. Would it be Leander, perhaps?
It would indeed. What was the girl's name?
Hero.
Yes, you're very good at this, Mr. Taylor. And the third is, who went through the earth for his? Mr. Kieran.
Orpheus.
Right. What was
Orpheus.
He
went down after Eurydice.
Eurydice.
That's quite right.
He didn't go all the way, though. He went halfway through the earth.
No, he went down.
Well, he turned around and came back, didn't he?
Well, what happened, Mr. Taylor, to Orpheus and Eurydice? What was the...
He charmed everybody, including Pluto, to such an extent, not Disney's dog, to such an extent that he was allowed to go down and bring his wife back on condition that he did not turn around and look at her.
Yeah.
On the way out.
Often a very easy condition.
Mm-hmm. But he did turn around and look at her, and that was that.
That's quite right, yes. Well, that gives us three out of three. Try this one for Mrs. E.A. Gibbons of Fresno, California. According to famous songs, what dear departed person is buried in the following places? I'm going to give you the quotes. Let's get you out of... Dear departed person is buried, quote, in the old churchyard in the valley. Mr. Adams.
Ben Bolt. Sweet Alice.
Sweet Alice, yes. You got the wrong half of the
That's
tale.
Both the last name.
That's right.
Sweet Alice.
Sweet Alice, in the corner obscure and alone, they have fitted a slab of granite so gray.
And Sweet Alice lies under the stone.
Yeah. You have just the voice for that story. Wonderful. Now, what departed person, equally dear, doubtless, is buried in the valley, the valley, the valley? That is not three persons, but just one. So, Mr. Adams again. Our mortuary expert.
Hallie.
Who?
Sweet Hallie.
Sweet Hallie is right. Very good. In what song would you find it, Mr. Adams?
Listen to the Mockingbird.
Are you going to sing that?
I could.
I think I could. Well, maybe some different
Back
thing.
Back right?
Finally, what one is buried in a churchyard near the canyon? In a churchyard near the canyon. Mr. Kieran.
I think that's my darling Clementine.
Yes, that's right. Where the myrtle doth entwine, there grow roses and other posies, fertilized by Clementine. Well, that's pretty easy, I guess. Try this. Mr. Taylor, you think it was too easy?
No.
Frank Craig of Daytona Beach, Florida, sends this one in. It's a musical question, Mrs. Davenport and gentlemen. What is the singer doing as he sings each of these celebrated operatic excerpts? You have to tell us what he's doing in the opera. You see, it should recall the proper scene to you. Let's have the first. And let the singer go through the entire part of the aria. Go ahead. That was not Adams, by the way, and just in case anyone was confused. Mrs. Davenport.
That's Cavaradossi painting Tosca's portrait.
That's quite right, yes. Cavaradossi is standing. Where's he standing?
In the first act, standing in the ante, in the front part, outside the church. I mean, there's a...
Isn't it a sort of a
in the cloister, isn't it?
A dais or a raised platform, Mr. Taylor?
Wait a minute, that's a... what do you call that thing at the beginning of a building?
You're not supposed to ask me, I'm supposed to ask you.
Oh,
maybe
well,
it works better
in the anteroom.
Well, it's on a standing on a dais, a painting, a picture, as you say.
I guess it's in the nave.
Pardon?
No, that would be inside the church, and you're not inside the church.
Isn't it?
Outside. Don't you know? You see the religious procession that's on its way across.
Yeah,
but
it was Lord Taylor. You're going to get the worst of this, I can tell you. We've had gals like Mr. Davenport on before. Now try the next one. That's quite right, Mr. Davenport.
Sigmund, dem Erweckung ist zu weit. Als Brautgabe bringt dich her.
I have two hands. Mr. Taylor.
I'll let Mrs. Davenport.
Well, you're right so far, Mr. Davenport.
I think Mr. Taylor's kidding me. It's Siegfried pulling the sword out of the tree.
Well,
not
exactly, Mr. Taylor.
It's
Sigmund. Oh, sure. I beg your pardon. Sigmund pulling the sword out of the
tree. Where is he standing?
He's with one foot on the floor and one foot on the branches of a tree.
Oh,
in the Metropolitan, he's standing on something that looks like a picnic table with a tree growing up
out
of the
floor. Yes, that's exactly it. Standing on a table. In what opera, Mr. Davenport, will you find this messy picture? Yes, and Die Walküre, quite right.
And a flickering light from the electrician's department falls upon the hilt of the sword.
You know,
when it works.
You make it sound terrible, I'm glad to hear. And now the third and last.
Oh, Lord, come on my way. Come on my way to heavenly land.
I'm very disappointed if you don't get
this.
Come on,
one, two, three, together. It's Porgy.
Porgy.
Yes, and what's Porgy doing, Mr. Davenport?
Porgy is rolling away on his cart when he sings that. Rolling away from the scene.
That's quite. And what opera would you find?
Porgy Gershwin's Porgy and Bess.
Porgy and Bess? Yes. How's the cart drawn? What draws the cart?
A goat.
A goat. You make two syllables out of that?
Yeah.
Well, generous, aren't you?
Just,
I guess we got 2.5 out of 3 on that. Try this. Mrs. Carolyn Foster of Mount Vernon sends this one in. Mount Vernon, New York. In each of these plays or poems, all or practically all of the outstanding characters are birds. This is right up your alley, Mr. Kieran. Identify each. Now, here's the first situation. A couple of old men who are dissatisfied with their own city take counsel with the king of the birds. Where would you find that situation? In what play, Mr. Adams?
In a Greek play.
Quite right. And what one?
The Bird.
Yes, by whom?
By,
You're not listening to
Euripides.
Taylor.
Euripides.
No, no. If you only listen to Taylor instead of being honest.
Aristophanes.
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 Yes. Aristophanes' famous comedy of the birds. Mm-hmm. Now, here's one in which the hero is enticed into a duel at a guinea hen's 5 o'clock tea. Mr. Kieran.
That is the story of Chanticleer by Rostand.
Yes. And at the tea, what does Chanticleer say? Or what's the... Doesn't he make a kind of lecture, as I recollect it?
Well, he's running a lot of fancy fighting fowl to tear his head off, and he makes fun of them and defies the Pile Blanc, who is the heavyweight champion, and he finally wins, anyhow.
Does he have any, that's quite. Does he have any aesthetic doctrine, Chanticleer?
Simplicity.
Simplicity, yes. Old-fashioned values against the aesthetes of the time. Now, in what play or poem are there birds, all of whom are involved in a murder mystery? All of whom are involved in a murder mystery.
Birds involved in a murder mystery.
Found lucubrations going on. Mr. Adams.
24 blackbirds baked in a pie.
That's no mystery.
Well, there are birds in that, but is it a murder mystery? I don't think so.
Maybe the pie is, but...
Mr. Kieran?
There's one, isn't there, a fairy tale in which the birds cover up the body with leaves and...
Yeah,
that's no
mystery,
though. They just died of exposure.
You're near to it, more or less. It's a nursery rhyme, Mr. Adams.
Cock Robin.
That's right, Mr. Kieran. Who killed Cock Robin, yes.
Yes, but the birds aren't, but there was a fly involved in it.
Yes, there was a fly involved. So I don't see why you have to bring that up, Mr. Taylor. Practically all the rest are birds.
Just for the sake of
it. We did get 2 out of 3. Now our 57 Varieties reporter has a message of vital importance to every mother and father of a teenage boy, Ben Grauer.
Through years of association with the farmers of America, we at Heinz have come to have a rather close understanding of their problems. And we realize that the current farm labor shortage not only handicaps the farmer, but seriously threatens America's war effort. And that's why we sincerely feel that the Boy Scouts of America, in pledging 100 million hours to farm work this summer, have launched a project worthy of every encouragement. If your boy is not a scout, think what membership now in this great character-building organization would mean to him and his country. While he is helping to relieve the food shortage, he'll be learning about farming, earning money, and at the same time benefiting from such helpful scout activities as camping and hiking. Under the scout farm plan, which varies according to locality, he may either do home gardening, live in an organized work camp, do day hall work, or actually reside on a farm. But no matter what the system, he'll have competent medical care and close supervision. Your son wants a part in winning this war. So encourage him to join the Boy Scouts now. For specific information, simply contact your nearest Boy Scout troop.
Thank you, Mr. Grauer. You've done your good deed for today. And now a question from Edward Van Leer of New York City. Identify the author or composer who used serious music and another for popular music. Although I don't see why the popular music couldn't be serious, too. He used two names. One for doing one kind of music, another for another. Does that come back to you, Mr. Taylor? Or is it far from you?
Oh, you mean...
Why, certainly.
Bukowski?
Yeah, the idea is to answer the question.
Oh! Oh, I thought you were going ahead and naming him, you see.
Now, we're on the air now, Mr. Taylor, yes. Quite right. Which is his real name, Mr. Taylor?
Bukowski.
Bukowski is his real name. He likes serious music naturally under that name.
And he's in the Navy.
And he's in the Navy, and his name for popular music is Vernon Duke.
Vernon Duke.
Right. Now, how about this one?
Rode April Time.
One was used by this person as an art critic, and another used when he wrote detective stories. Mrs. Davenport.
That's Willard Huntington Wright, who was as an art critic, and this is the writer of detective stories.
Yes, that's the real name. Name too, doesn't it, Willard Huntington Wright? That's quite right. The creator of Philo Vance. How about this one? He uses one name for books on political economy. This is going to slay you. And he uses the same name for humorous sketches. Who is that? Mr. Taylor.
Stephen Leacock.
Stephen Leacock, the famous Canadian author. Very good.
He is, too.
Very good indeed. You're going on all cylinders, Mr. Taylor.
Nothing really.
Yeah, I can trip you up. John D. Bell of Milwaukee sends this in. Name the play or opera in which a man interferes in a duel with the result that his friend is killed. Mr. Kieran.
Romeo and Juliet.
That is the play and opera. And who kills whom?
Mercutio is slain because Romeo jumps in between him and the furious Tybalt.
That's quite right, yes. Exactly right. Here is one case in which a god interferes in a duel, and his son is killed. A god interferes, Mr. Taylor.
Wotan right. interferes in the duel between Hunding and Siegmund.
That's right. And who gets knocked off?
Siegmund gets knocked off.
Yeah, that's one of the few happy moments in the opera.
Scandinavian mythology.
In this case, a wife interferes to save her husband from being murdered. A wife interferes to save her husband from being murdered. That seems to strike you as an exaggerated situation, Mrs. Davenport, gentlemen. Apparently.
Heard of such a thing.
Never heard of such a thing? Mm-hmm. Mrs. Davenport, let's come back to you. Mr. Adams?
You're up.
Good. Which one, Mr. Davenport?
Fidelio,
yes.
Oh.
Now you see how I feel sometimes.
Oh, anyone is liable to make a mistake, and they often do. Yes, Leonore masquerades as Fidelio in prison, isn't that right? And her husband is being held there, and she saves him from being killed. By whom is he supposed to be killed? Forgotten.
Beethoven.
More likely the critics.
A man named Pizarro.
A man named Pizarro. Good. Well, I'm glad to get
that
information.
He's a man that conquered Peru also.
Yes, but it's not the same
not
Pizarro.
The same one. Don't confuse us, Mr. Taylor, with this gratuitous information.
Well,
give us 2 out of 3. I must stump you people. How about Helen C. Flood's question? This comes from Trenton, New Jersey. What was the nature of the rides that these people took? Mazeppa's ride. What sort of ride was that? And, of course, who was Mazeppa? M-A-Z-E-P-P-A. Mr. Taylor.
Well, I can go no further than to say that she was tied to the back of a horse.
You've got the wrong sex.
Well, I mean, the horse was tied to the horses.
He was.
Or tied
yes.
to the back of a mare, you mean?
No. Now, Mazeppa does sound as if it would be a lady.
Mazeppa was the horse.
An ending.
Do you think Mazeppa was the horse, Adam?
I think Mazeppa was the horse, 8-5 and out.
Now, I've got to get myself straight as well as our indulgent audience, and so I will now say, just to confirm what Mr. Taylor was going to say, that in Byron's famous poem of Mazeppa's ride, Mazeppa, who is a man, is tied in a state of undress. Is that right, Mr. Taylor? Naked?
Disarray, we call it.
Right. Yeah. Tightly no clothes on.
Yeah.
He's tied naked to the back of a wild horse and carries him from the Polish court to the Ukraine somewhere.
Yes.
Do you know why you thought it was a woman?
No. Tell me, Mr. Bone.
All right. For this reason that a famous woman actress of the last century, whom you may remember, Miss Adams, used to play the part of Mazeppa in a state, as you put it delicately, of disarray. And
that's
so many
right.
people got to thinking that Mazeppa was a woman.
Yeah.
And you apparently thought the same. But Mazeppa was a man played by
Clara Morris?
Pardon?
Clara Morris?
I don't know, Clara. I don't know who it was. I forget who it was. Some very famous lady. How about Europa's ride? Europa's ride, Mr. Kieran?
She rode on a milk-white bull.
Yes, where?
She was carried out to sea by Jupiter, disguised as the bull, I suppose, across the Aegean or the Ionian Sea.
Carried, as a matter of fact, to an island which has recently become very famous, very well known, Crete.
Crete.
Carried to Crete on the back of a white bull. There's no question about the sex of Europa, Mr. Kieran.
Nor of the bull either.
No. Any comeback on that one? How about the famous ride of Skipper Ireson? Skipper Ireson's ride. Mr. Taylor.
Turd and feathered and carried on a rail by the women of Marblehead.
Why, Mr. Adams, did this happen to the poor skipper, do you know? Why was he
turned? I know. The women of Marblehead were in that, but
they
why?
Certainly were, yes.
John knows.
Mr. Kieran?
He refused to rescue some townspeople who were...
Yes, I think he deserted the ship with the men aboard. That's quite right. And you'll find the story, Mr. Kieran, where?
Skipper Ironside's Ride.
By
Ironson.
By yes. John J. Whittier.
J.G. Whittier.
By J.G. Whittier. Well, that gives us the complete story.
J. Greenleaf Whittier.
Like pulling teeth. Are you finished with Whittier?
Okay.
Try this one. Martin Roth of New York sends this in. It's about cookery. You cook, Mrs. Davenport?
Yes.
All right. Try this one. With what forms of cookery are these unusual materials associated? The first set of materials, seaweed and canvas. What kind of cookery do you do in association? Mr. Davenport.
A clam bake.
A clam bake. How do you cook clams that way?
Well, you usually sink a barrel in the sand and fill the barrel full of clams.
Yeah.
And other things, lobsters and ears of corn and various things like that. And then on top of that, you put seaweed. And then on top of that, you put a great many hot rocks that you've heated for about a day and a half in a big fire in the sand before. And on top of the whole thing, you put wet canvas. And then you go away.
And then you go home.
who eats the barrel, Mr. Kevin?
Who eats the barrel?
Well, that's exactly right. It's a famous clam bake. I guess you find a lot of that sort of stuff around... Maine and
all up and down the Atlantic.
Lambeck is also an insufficiently rehearsed radio program.
Yes, but none of your autobiography.
Don't point.
here's another unusual kind of material used in cookery. A slab of wood. Used in what sort of cookery? A slab of wood, Mr. Adams.
In planked whitefish.
That's odd. I shouldn't be surprised if that were true. Planked whitefish. How do you make planked whitefish at a venture?
You bake it on a plank.
You mean you put the plank in the fire along with the whitefish?
That's right.
You do?
Yes, sir.
Is he right, Mr. Davenport?
Well, yeah, I think you grill it on a plank rather than bake it. It has to be done on an open fire of some kind because that...
I think that between the two of you, you've approximately got it. In addition to cooking whitefish...
And steak also. You plank many things, but notably fish and beefsteak.
Yes, that's quite right.
Nowadays, no beefsteak, kid.
That's true enough. Now, suppose you used a hoe blade and hot ashes. You would cook Mr. Davenport what?
Hoe cake.
How's it done?
Well, you make a mess of cornmeal and water and put it on a hoe and stick it in the fire.
Is it any good?
No, it's terrible.
No.
Well, that
and
cancels
again,
about 42 southern stations, I guess. Got 3 out of 3 on that. Now I notice that our Heinz reporter has a sentimental gleam in his eye that bears investigation. Mr. Grauer.
I'd be the first person in the world to pay tribute to modern architecture, but I'm also old-fashioned about that great American institution, the pantry. I can still picture grandmother's pantry with its food-laden shelves. And the mere thought brings back a whole roster of fragrant memories, of great golden-crusted loaves of fresh-baked bread peeking out from under snowy towels, pans of whipped cream and crocks of yellow butter. And on the neatly lined shelves, those familiar Keystone-labeled bottles of Heinz horseradish, pickles, and tomato ketchup. Yes, way back in the horse and buggy days, the 57 varieties were saving time for busy women, adding flavor to their meals just as they do today. For 74 years, the House of Heinz has kept faith with American housewives, brewing their soups to cherished heirloom recipes, putting up their sparkling jellies and crisp green pickles, preparing chili sauce and mustard the careful home way. Perhaps that's why so many Americans of all ages look to Heinz for the quality and flavor that make a meal something to remember.
Thank you, Mr. Grauer. Now try this one. Mrs. A.K. Emery of Corvallis, Oregon sends this one in. What, according to the poets, is nobly planned? What is nobly planned, Mr. Adams?
A perfect woman.
Yes. Can you go on with the quotation?
Nobly planned to warn, to comfort, and command.
Exactly right, Mr. Adams.
Seldom executed.
Very well, Mr. What's it from, Mr. Adams?
Wordsworth.
Wordsworth. What's the title of the poem, Mr. Kieran?
She was a phantom of delight.
Yes, she was a phantom of delight. Now, what, according to the poet again, is done quickly? Mr. Kieran.
Murder.
Yes. And in particular, whose murder?
Why, that was Mr. Macbeth musing on the contemplated murder of his friend and guest, Duncan.
Yes. You remember the line in which the phrase done quickly is
were done when twere done and farewell, twere done quickly.
Yes, that's it. Very good.
It took longer than the murder.
Mrs. Davenport.
The least said.
Yes, least said is soonest mended. I oft have heard defended, little said is soonest mended. Who wrote the lines? They're very famous, and I think most of us, including myself, didn't know until now that they were written by...
Sounds a little like Benjamin Franklin.
No, it doesn't... It may sound like Benjamin Franklin, but it was written by a man named George Wither. And now that I say George Wither, it sounds to me very much more as if it were written by George Wither than Benjamin Franklin, Mr. That's 3 out of 3. Mrs. R.D. Stout wouldn't do any harm
if you muffed a couple of questions, Mrs. Davenport. When Mrs. R.D. Stout of Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, sends this one in. I think we ought to get all three on this. What products are brought from these distant lands to be used by American manufacturers in the following cities? What product is brought from China to Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, to be used by an American manufacturer? Bought from China, Mr. Taylor?
Here goes an encyclopedia. Tungsten.
Oh, that's right. I'm so sorry. Tungsten's quite right. Used in what process?
Manufacture of steel.
Yes, quite right. But I don't know whether we get tungsten from any other place than China. Do you know, Mrs. Davenport?
I don't know. I know it comes in the most important quantities in China, but I think it comes from other Asiatic places, too.
Yes, I have a feeling it does, too. And how about something that's brought from Syria to Richmond? Syria to Richmond. Richmond, the American city. Mrs. Davenport.
Tobacco, for blending tobacco.
Well, but particularly what? Carrying tobacco to Richmond is like carrying coal to Newcastle.
Yes, but special kinds of Near Eastern tobaccos that are used in blending with American tobacco.
You mind if I pin you down?
Latakia.
Latakia, yes.
I was afraid to say that.
Just something that's grown in Syria. Latakia, it's a special kind of tobacco used for, I guess, for giving a kind of extra bite, isn't it? Flavor?
Pipe tobacco.
It's very mild.
It is mild?
Yes. I think it's used to give bulk, frankly.
I'll come right out with it and say bulk.
All right.
How do you spell it, Mr. Adams?
Latakia.
Very good. And what product is brought from Sumatra to Pittsburgh? From Sumatra to Pittsburgh.
Dancing girls.
No such luck for Pittsburgh. Mr. Davenport?
Various kinds of spices for use in H.J. Heinz pickles.
That's very good, Mr. Davenport. Mr. Davenport, you have the makings of a regular guest. We may have time for this from Alice K. Amos in Chicago. Who hid behind the following things? Who hid behind a hanging? Who hid behind a hanging? Mr. Kieran.
Polonius, unfortunately for himself.
Good enough. And he was stabbed by our old friend.
Hamlet. Hamlet, Prince of Denmark.
Yes, a case of mistaken error.
Or a rat behind the arrow.
Right.
Dead for a ducat.
And now, who hid behind a screen? Who hid behind a screen?
Who hasn't?
Silver screen?
No, I don't know what it was made of. It was Lady Teazle in The School for Scandal by Sheridan. And who hid behind among trees in a garden? Well, that's a tough one. It was Adam and Eve who hid from God because they had eaten of the tree of knowledge and therefore knew shame.
Never heard of them.
Well,
and
that will send $57 in war bond stamps to Miss Amison and a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Thank you, Mr. Davenport and Mr. Taylor, for adding to the fund this evening. Tonight, the H.J. Heinz Company has paid out $57 in war bonds and stamps and one set of the Britannica. Next week, the good old trio of Adams, Kieran, and Levant will bat them out along with our guest, the famous British author Hilary St. George Saunders, author of the bestseller about the Commandos, Combined Operations. Remember, send your questions and the correct answers to Information, Please, at 570 Lexington Avenue, New York City. And now, Ben Brower.
H.J. Heinz Company wishes you good night and good health. Be with us again next Monday at the same time to help stump the experts. And this week, if your son isn't now a Boy Scout, encourage him to join this organization, whose members are doing so much to win the war as they build the foundation of a finer America in the years to come.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.